Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are here to talk all about Red Dwarf Series 11. That's right, folks. We are here to talk about the fine mining ship Red Dwarf and, you know, its wonderful crew and what their adventures and shenanigans, that's a good word for it, shenanigans, have been up to for their 11th season. And so to talk all about it with me, I have my favorite co-host. Let's welcome Mr. Mike Gordon.
Howdy, and smeg off, you smeghead.
You've been practicing that, haven't you? Or you just have been waiting?
I say, yeah, you know how much prep I put in this show.
As much as I do.
Exactly. Little to none.
Exactly. Bada boom. So it's pretty darn awesome, though, to be able to almost 30 years later still be talking about Red Dwarf. It's pretty darn amazing.
It's, you know, I mean, it's an incredible show. I mean, you know, whether you like it or you hate it, you have to respect it. And you have to respect that they've been, you know, the show's been on for in some form. There's been, you know, Red Dwarf, you know, it goes away and it comes back, but it's always there and it's been around for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's interesting to, you know, see, you know, how the show's evolved, and they had a great season 10. So talking all about season 11 will be very interesting to see. And we got a great crew to talk about it. And of course, what can we say? We want to hear from you guys at home. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. You know, did you like season 11 or did you not? And if you really loved it, call us 404-963-9057. And yes, folks, we are working on technology that possibly you might be able to instant message us while we are recording the show. And we'll start putting those times out there so that that way you can make suggestions while we are recording a lot in real time. Kind of cool.
Oh, that's scary.
I know. It is almost scary to think about the wonders of technology to do that to us.
It'll do something to us.
Well, that's a whole different story. So with that being said, the show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon store, where Series 11 of Red Dwarf is now available. You can order it and, you know, find out all kinds of other stuff, and it helps support the station, as we like to say. You know, as we like to say, the Amazon store is our main source of income, and for this podcast, that's how we make our money. You know, we don't charge you for any episodes. We don't have, you know, a subscription fee like some podcasts are doing now. We, you know, give this to you for free. We're doing this on our own. And to help, you know, make some money, we are, you know, just have the Amazon store. We have the Zazzle store, and we have new stuff coming up very, very soon. So watch the space, as we like to say. So with that being said, let's get started with this week's rants and raves, and we talk about what's on our minds. Mike, what do you got going on?
A couple things, actually. The first thing I want to do, and again, I don't sort of as a continuation of sort of last week's episode where we talked about, presidential portrayals. I don't want to get really political here, but, I do want to just give a special rave. Thank you. Shout out to everybody who participated and showed support in the march on Saturday. It was worldwide, and it was quite successful in terms of getting people together. I think it was the biggest gathering of folks since I think the Iraq War. So that was that's pretty huge, considering all the stuff that's happened around the world since then. And, it was obviously there was a lot of anti-current establishment stuff there, but also the message there was more about concern about making sure that voices were heard, that presence was felt, and done so in a peaceful manner. The reports of anything extreme happening were very rare. I think a few cities had little minor incidences, but moreover, it was a peaceful demonstration. And there's a beautiful video of some folks high-fiving and hugging the Atlanta cops on their way as they were walking, which just is a waving up high to the snipers that were set up on the rooftops above the Capitol, around the Capitol area. But it was just a really nice vibe. And for those folks who couldn't be there, like myself, or for those folks especially who were there, like Michelle, I just have tremendous respect for that, for them, for doing that. And I just wanted to make mention of it here. Like I said, it's not so much a political statement as it is a social statement, and a statement that, you know what, we can all come together and we can, be united and do so in a peaceful environment. And I think this is just a very nice step towards things of the future. You know, there might be some things that are going to happen that are not so cool, but I think that we've shown that that there's a lot of people out there who care, and there's a lot of people out there who are all about love and peace, and that's never a bad thing. So I did want to mention that.
Awesome.
And probably in much, much bigger news, people in the geek community are definitely much more excited about, was the fact that they released the name of episode 8. The title of episode 8, Star Wars episode 8, will be titled The Last Jedi. It came out of the blue from StarWars.com, although there were rumblings that we were going to get something over the next few days. So now there's been no other news or information or images apart from the font Star Wars in red with the words The Last Jedi attached to it. So there's nothing else that Disney, Lucasfilm want to release at this time. But so it's funny to see all the speculation already about what this means, about what the red color of the letters mean. It's funny what the stars in the background mean. Give a geeks just some little crumb and they will obsess over it. And look, I'm the same way. I'm not criticizing, because it's what makes us us. And it's fun. You know, I mean, I know that title has been used before. To me, I think of it, when I think of The Last Jedi, there was when Marvel still had the comic license way back in the day, there was a Last Jedi comic cover that featured this old relic Jedi that Luke was it was like some crazy guy that Luke had found, who you weren't really sure was a Jedi, or if he ever was or wasn't, and that kind of thing. He was just kind of this crazy old guy. So that was that comic story. I don't think that's what they're going to do here. There's another, I think there's a expanded universe book that was titled The Last Jedi, but I don't think that's in continuity anymore. And I don't know what that was about. And the only thing the only other 2 cents that I can add to the title is that, in the scroll of Force Awakens, it does refer to Luke Skywalker as the Last Jedi. So, you would think that means that this movie may involve him a little bit more, certainly couldn't involve him any less. And also remember that Jedi is also plural as well as singular. So when it says The Last Jedi, it could be referring to multiple persons apart from just one person. So that's all I got. What did you think when you saw the title, Mike?
I was a little surprised, but I just kept on thinking, please don't kill Luke. Please don't kill Luke. Please don't kill Luke. So I'm looking forward to it, and it's interesting with the coloring with the red also. So it'll be some kind of significance, you know, or are we just overthinking it like most fans do?
It might be the franchise is going through a midlife crisis.
Don't go there. I don't want to talk about midlife crises, man.
Because, you know, I mean, it is red. Maybe Star Wars feels that it needs to kind of be flashy again. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. You know, you sometimes can get into that kind of thing. And when you do, you get, you know, red sports cars, and the Jedi's could be, you know, going all out in their red fighters or something like that.
Exactly. Luke and his red X-Wing.
Exactly. See? That's not a bad way to look at it.
His red X-Wing convertible.
So, all right. I think that could work. I really think that could work. I'm very curious to see what happens, and you know, let's go for it.
I'm excited for this one. I mean, I'm excited for this movie. So we'll it remains to be seen, but I think we're off to, I don't hate the title. So we're off to a good start.
Hey, cool. Better than what you thought about Rogue One. So
I didn't hate that title either, but yes, I know what you're going with.
Mm-hmm, exactly. All right. My turn. I've got to talk to you guys at home. I need some advice, so please feel free. And Mike, you know, feel free to chip in as you always do. I've talked in the past, and way in the past, about my love for cable companies. Not. And, you know, I've run hot and cold on it. And, you know, we've actually started the process of slowly cutting the cable and getting rid of it. You know, we can't do it completely yet. You know, I'm not that brave, per se, to go fully streaming and such. I know quite a few friends of mine have, you know, but, you know, we're coming up to what they call a 2-year grace period with Comcast. And basically Comcast has been, you know, giving me this huge discount, you know, as promotion thing. And that's coming up at the end of February. And so I've started, you know, searching around to see what we can do. And basically, I'm not going to tell you how much I'm paying because, you know, that's between me and Comcast. But Comcast is basically, you know, if we want to stay with them, as of right now, we talked to the retention team. We've talked to, you know, if we want to stay with what we have now, maybe slightly faster internet, and they want to up my bill by almost $50.
Oh.
And this is for one TV, folks. We've already disconnected the TV in the bedroom, and we've also disconnected the TV in the kitchen and also down in the basement. We've put we put the digital antennas on them, and we get almost 30 channels here at our house without cable, which is pretty darn awesome compared to when I had rabbit ears growing up as a kid. We had what, 5 channels at the most?
Oh, listen to you. You just celebrated a birthday and now you're already the old man going, when I was a kid.
Oh, shush up. Shush, shush, shush. But where I was going with it is we're paying for one DVR, one TV with cable. And, you know, we have one premium channel. We have HBO because that's why we liked Westworld and Game of Thrones. We do want to, you know, sometimes we watch Stars because, you know, Judy watches Outlander, and, you know, I know American Gods is actually starting up this spring on Stars also. And, you know, I'm a huge Neil Gaiman fan, so probably we'll try to get that again. But we have, you know, we also have, you know, we're streaming Netflix and we're streaming Amazon Prime, but that's it. That's all we do. We have the Apple TV, and we also, of course, through our DVD player, that's how we get our Amazon Prime. And so, you know, we have it, all the different things. So, you know, we watch like the WWE Network. William likes watching that. And, you know, we've watched, you know, mostly the pay-per-views and such. And, you know, there's other things we do stream, and, you know, we do Pandora and all that kind of stuff. So what I'm going with is, I know AT&T is starting to phase out their U-verse system because they're going all towards pushing people towards the Dish system. And I've just heard horror stories about the Dish. I've always been a little hesitant about doing it because of, you know, inclement weather, or, you know, if it's raining, I heard it breaks up the signal. I heard if it, you know, if you get a big windstorm, you know, same thing. And, you know, is it really worth it? Does that make sense? So, you know, I'm wondering what options I should do. Should I just drop cable and just stream everything and just pay like $60-$70 a month and go? Because I know here they don't have Google Fiber yet where we live, but I know, you know, the two options for cable was AT&T UVerse or the Dish Network, whatever it is now, or DirecTV, I think it's called. And of course, Comcast. We don't have Charter. We don't have Verizon. We don't have any of the others yet. And so, you know, we're kind of limited. Should I just cut the cord completely, maybe buy a whole house antenna, run the cable down through the walls or something and hook it up to the cable box so the TVs can just hook up that way? Or what do you guys recommend? You know, I would love to hear from you guys at home. Any suggestions would be awesome. Should I try fighting it out with Comcast, see about, you know, them working a better deal with me? You know, because, you know, most of the time when you talk to somebody on the phone at those corporations, they can care less. And that's just an honest, you know, feeling that I get when I talk to the cable company and say, hey, I'm going to leave you if you don't give me a better bill. They're like, okay, see you. There's the door. That's what I usually feel like. And like when I told the guy, it's like, I'm not going to pay $50 more a month for the same thing I'm getting now. It's just like, you know, it's like, well, take it or leave it, you know? So I really don't know where to turn. So that's why I'm turning to the listeners. This is your opportunity, folks. Please write me at esopodcast@gmail.com. I definitely would love to hear from you, or, you know, message me up on Facebook. So definitely want to hear all about it. So
there definitely seems to be a lot more options now. So, which makes it even more excusable for Comcast Xfinity to act like they do sometimes. And I also, one of the other things that I don't care for them, is the fact that they're different with different areas. Like, they don't act like a nationwide business. They act like they're different, like, your setup is different. You have Comcast. I have Comcast. The award-winning Bobby Nash has less than award-winning Comcast. And yet we all have three different experiences and we all have three different cable scenarios. My parents have Comcast. My sister has Comcast. Phantom Troublemaker has Comcast. So many people I know have Comcast. And yet the experiences, the packages that we have, the deals that they have, completely different across the board. And it doesn't make any sense to me. And it's like that consistency makes it so difficult to deal with. You know, I mean, I've been fortunate where I've never had a bad experience with Comcast. In fact, the last time I dealt with them, and I did go in person, Mike. So maybe that's an option that you have, or maybe, that, you know, you would get a better response if you actually went to someone in person.
Well, that's what I was, it's what I was thinking of, going to. They have the Xfinity stores now.
Yes. And that's where I did. I would exchange a lot of equipment because my equipment needed to be updated. And I went in there and I said, look, while I was in there, I was like, look, I got to talk to somebody about, you know, what I'm paying, because I just think it's too much and I'm going to might have to drop some stuff. And she's like, no, in fact, I can, you know, for a deal, you know, she said, I can give you this package. And it ended up being cheaper and it gave me more channels. You know, it's a different thing. And I don't know why I've mentioned it to other people and they've contacted their Comcast provider or whatever, and they don't have that same deal. So I don't understand why it's different, but, it does make it even more frustrating. So, but like I said, there's plenty of other options now, and that's why I think, Comcast should be a lot more competitive in their pricing and their attitude.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, some of the people I've talked to have been great. Don't get me wrong. These people have, you know, oh, I'm sorry, sir. My hands are tied or whatever. And then half the time it sounds like the person's doing their nails and they can care less as I'm talking to them. So it's just like, it's headbanging, and I don't mean in a good way. So, you know, definitely want to hear from you guys at home. Let me know what you guys recommend, because I have literally till February 20th to make my decision. So time's a ticking. Please write me, esopodcast@gmail.com. Definitely would love to hear from you guys. So I think that is it for right now. Want to hear from you guys at home. You know, all the shows are coming back from winter break. So you're getting started up this week with all the DC shows. Marvel's been knocking it out of the ballpark with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far. And, you know, I've been really enjoying that. You know, definitely let us know what you guys think. Please write us. We definitely want to hear from you. With that being said, let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment with The Geek Seat.
The White Rocket Podcast, hosted by Van Allen Plexico, covering the entire universe of popular culture, movies, TV, books, comics, music, and more, with interviews, convention panels, discussions about current and classical works, and much more. The White Rocket Podcast, it's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. We are here with fellow ESO podcaster, Jonathan Williams. Welcome, sir.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the station, sir. At last, we finally get you on the mothership.
Yeah, I know. It's been, we've talked about it a few times and glad to finally be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, for those people who don't know you from the other, from the Wrestling Roundtable show, as well as from your work on Wrestling with Pop Culture, tell us a little about yourself.
Well, I ended up being part of the ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable a year or so ago when it kind of got relaunched. After I hosted a podcast, another wrestling podcast called Georgia Wrestling Now for several years. It focused mostly on the Georgia wrestling scene, and it was a weekly podcast. And prior to that, I was a freelance journalist for numerous publications for a decade or so. And that's kind of what led to WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. Multiple award-winning blog, I should mention.
Absolutely, absolutely. How long has that been running?
I just had my 5th anniversary last year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it's kind of been somewhat dormant as of late because I kind of transitioned into a new profession as a day job as a set dresser for the local film industry. So it's rather intensive. I usually work 12 hour days, 5 or sometimes 6 days a week. So I don't really have a lot of time for much else. So in between those jobs, I try to update Wrestling with Pop Culture, and I still occasionally will write for other publications here and there. If you look at it now, it's probably about 3 months overdue for an update. But it's still there, and it'll be updated eventually.
Well, as far as, I mean, is that kind of your background, you know, growing up and getting out there doing writing and journalistic type things?
Yeah, I mean, I you know, I've always been a fan of various forms of arts and entertainment. And then I went to college and I didn't really know what I wanted to do or be. So I just kind of coasted for a few years, and finally my advisor said, you have to pick a major.
those pesky majors.
Yeah. So I kind of just looked at what kind of classes I had taken, and I was, I think, 2 classes away from an English major and 1 class away from a writing minor and 1 class away from a philosophy minor. So that's what I ended up getting, was a degree in English with a minor in philosophy and a minor in writing. And then I guess during my senior year, I still wasn't really sure what I was going to do with all that. So one of my professors suggested that I write for the school paper. And I think, if I remember correctly, my first, or at least one of my first 2 or 3 articles was a review of Dragon Con. And
when was that?
It's this little comic convention thing that happens.
Was that, no, was that, I mean, when was that? Was that the first, oh, when, the first few years or?
When was that? I'm sorry. Yeah. I said, what is that? I thought you were being let's see. That was probably, it must have been 98.
Okay.
So
I was gonna say, I'd have to be hit in the head pretty darn hard not to know what Dragon Con is.
Yeah.
If I ever start asking what's Dragon Con, Mike, you really need to get the paramedics.
Oh, we know, you know, or that, or we'll be sending you to the home for the old aged podcasters or something.
So I'm sorry. You covered Dragon Con.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that kind of was a kind of set me on a certain path, I guess. I mean, I did a lot of different types of stuff, but Dragon Con's kind of always been something ever since that was the first year I went. And ever since then, I've been every year, and it kind of influenced a lot of things to come for me. So my entire journalistic career was very much influenced by things that I saw there. You know, wrestling obviously is a big part of Dragon Con. It wasn't as big a part of it then as it is now, but you know, it was kind of just the convergence of everything, almost everything that I always enjoyed, you know, all the whole geek culture stuff. And in a roundabout way is, you know, years later, I started my blog and you know, Dragon Con's always something that I've covered there as well.
Sure.
But yeah, to answer your question, my professional background has been in journalism. And I guess initially I thought, you know, I wanted to write. I decided, you know, towards the end of my senior year of college, I decided, you know, I like to read a lot and I got a minor in writing. And so I want to write, and I figured I'd write fiction and things like that. And I thought, you know, if I can survive off of journalism and then in my free time do creative writing, but, it ended up becoming, you know, something that didn't allow a lot of free time.
Right.
Not in a bad way, but you know, I go to Dragon Con, I go to concerts, I go to other conventions and art shows and all kinds of stuff like that. And then I write about it. So that's pretty much, you know, that consumes a lot of my time.
Right. And plus when you do something for a living, sometimes in your spare time, that's the last thing you want to do. It's like, right. Oh, I do not want to write because that's what I do all the time.
Yeah. So, but just in the past, almost a little more than a year, I kind of transitioned into this other career in the film industry. And, it's kind of inspiring me now to do creative writing again, but again, it will have to happen when I'm not working, you know, in between movie jobs or whatever. Hopefully I can set aside some time to explore some of that. But, like I said, I'm still juggling that and the blog and the journalism, and podcasting is a little easier because, you know, I just talk to my co-host and whoever we end up interviewing, and I don't have to type it up later or anything like that.
Right. Right.
We do it and then it's out there.
And great job too. I mean, you guys have been killing it on the Wrestling Roundtable. I mean, having you know, interviewing the WWE World Champion as well as was it Jay Lethal that you guys had on recently too?
Yeah, he was the most recent.
Yeah, so yeah. Some great stuff that you guys are doing over there. So congratulations on all that.
Thanks.
That's, well, no small potatoes, my friend.
Yeah. And a lot of that comes from, you know, my previous dealings with WWE and Ring of Honor and things like that. Sure. I've interviewed a lot of people like that over the years. And so when they have someone available, they still contact me. And that's now the outlet that gets to get those things. I was as surprised as everybody else about the AJ Styles thing, because all I did was email them and ask them for tickets to the, there was a house show, back in December, and I was just asking if I could get some tickets. And the response was, sure, how many do you want? And we have AJ Styles on this day at this time. And oddly enough, I wasn't able to be part of the interview, but thankfully my co-hosts Richard and John were able to do that. And
it's a fun interview too. It's a great piece.
I did, you know, give them a few questions. Like, here's some stuff I would ask if I was going to be part of this. So they did that, you know. So I was sort of part of it.
Yeah, you could tell they were a little nervous, but it was still pretty fun. And AJ was kind of nervous too. Not just.
Well, I thought it was that Bat Neil guy who he was a little intimidated by.
Yeah, right.
Well, that guy is a little intimidating, I guess.
Absolutely. Well, very cool. We're definitely glad to have you as part of our network, and awesome. Always running into you at shows and whatnot. So I'm glad we were able to do this because, you know, the Geek Seat is hungry and it just requires victims. So I'm afraid it's that time, Mike.
It is. Sadly enough, we have to feed the beast, as we like to say on this show. Jonathan, are you ready for your first question in the Geek Seat?
I guess so.
And you thought the wrestling stuff was hard. All right. Your first question in the Geek Seat was, what is your favorite geek out moment?
Let's see. There's a lot of those, but I think, I'd have to say the biggest one was, it was a very long time ago. But I briefly met Trent Reznor from Nine Inch Nails. At the Masquerade here in Atlanta. And I've always been a big Nine Inch Nails. Well, I kind of got into Nine Inch Nails probably around the time that the Downward Spiral came out. I had a college roommate that was a big fan, and I wasn't that familiar with them at the time. And then I quickly became very familiar with them and saw them perform at the Fox, and saw them a few times. And then they had done a show. It was sort of a secret, not a secret show, but like they announced it a couple days before. I want to say it was 96 or so. But, you know, they were at that point, they were well beyond playing a small club or a medium sized club like the Masquerade. But they did a showcase of, at the time, he had his own record label called Nothing Records. And they did hit Nine Inch Nails and a few of the other bands performed. And you had to camp out to get tickets. You couldn't go to Ticketmaster or anything like that. So I was able to get tickets to that show. And then the next night, a band called Meat Beat Manifesto, which was on his label, performed. And I was standing off to the side of the stage and talking to a friend of mine. And all of a sudden, her eyes got really big. And I was like, what's wrong with you? And she pointed like over my shoulder and said, and just mouthed like, that's Trent Reznor. Like, he had just bumped into my back, and I turned around and looked, and I was like, no, that's not him. Like, he's way too short. As you know, I guess anybody that you kind of look up to like that, you kind of see them in a larger scale. But, then I just stopped and looked, and I was like, oh, that is him. And then I just started talking to him about, some of the bands and stuff. And he signed something for me, and I don't even know whatever happened to that. It was just like a flyer for another upcoming show at the Masquerade. But, you know, I've met a lot of people, and he's one person that I met him, but I've never had a chance to interview him still to this day. So that was the closest that I've gotten. Hopefully I'll actually get to have a meaningful conversation with him someday.
That is awesome. That is really awesome. What was your most disappointing geek out moment, though?
Let's see. I guess I would say this was a Dragon Con moment. I think it was shortly after the Devil's Rejects came out. Ken Free and Michael Berryman, I think. Am I getting their names right? They were there as guests, and I had a press pass, so I was going around, you know, talking to different people and asking if I could take pictures of them and stuff like that. And Michael Berryman said, sure, but you'll still have to pay, like, you know, because they charge to take pictures with fans. And I was like, no, I'm not. I don't want to even be in the picture with you. I just want a picture of you guys at your table, blah, blah, blah. And he was like, okay, sure. But you're still going to have to pay. And I showed him my press bat, my press pass badge thing. And I had some stuff, you know, while I was waiting to talk to him, I picked out some things I was going to purchase and things like that and get him to sign. And but he just was so weird about that, that I finally was just like, okay, never mind. And just like didn't buy anything and didn't take his picture because I didn't want to pay to put.
Wow.
It was just awkward. And other people have told me that he's like one of the nicest people they've met. And I'm still a fan of his work, but I just thought it was awkward. And Ken Free was not like that. He was cool. You know, he was like, yeah, I'll do a picture, whatever.
That's awesome.
And they were basically sharing a table. So it was kind of awkward that one of them was just like, well, no, you're going to have to pay me.
Right. No, totally. So, that's weird. What geeks you out the most?
I guess I'd have to say not necessarily geeking out about meeting people or things like that, but I really enjoy when somebody else is enthusiastic about something, even if it's something that I'm not that interested in, and just letting them indulge, you know, that geekdom, whether it's cars or Doctor Who or, you know, toys or whatever.
Right. Of course.
I just enjoy, you know, that's a big part of Dragon Con, is going to panels and seeing a lot of times the best panels are just people who are passionate about a subject, not necessarily people who are involved with that thing, but just people who are really interested in it.
Mm-hmm. Of course. What turns your geek off though?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I guess kind of the flip side of that is people who don't know as much as they want you to think they know about something, or something that I know a lot about, and then they try to tell me things about it that I know are wrong. And so I'm just like, well, do I tell them they're wrong or do I just let them go? And
right. No, that totally makes sense. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
There's a lot of them.
Okay, pick one.
Well, do wrestlers count as fictional characters?
Sure.
All right. Well,
some of them definitely do.
Well, I'd say the Ultimate Warrior. Does that one count?
Oh, yeah.
He changed his name, so he became the character. So I don't know if that counts, but and then I guess my next choice would be a similar one. Marilyn Manson, I would like to meet, but I mean, that's like another thing where he sort of is the character.
Right. Of course. What fictional character would you not like to meet though?
I guess I'm not a huge, I'm not as big a fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer as some people are.
Right.
But the character Xander always annoyed me.
I don't think you were the only person who ever felt that way.
Really? Because whenever I say that, people are like, oh, no, I love him. But I just always thought if I knew this guy in person, I would not like him. I mean, in real life. If he was a real person in real life and I knew him, I would not like him.
Okay. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Phrase, quote, or pose?
Yes, sir.
I don't know. I like a lot of the Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners, like get to the chopper or I'll be back.
Okay.
But I don't know. I find myself, I can't think of any at the moment, but I'm often quoting things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper. All right.
Always a good one.
That is a good one. I like that one. What's your ideal geek occupation?
I think wrestling booker would be an ideal geek occupation.
Okay.
Just because, you know, I think a lot of, as we often do on the ESO Pro Wrestling Roundtable, fans often have ideas for matchmaking and things like that. And to actually be able to do that, you know, when you watch WWE or something and you wonder, like, why did this match never happen or something like that?
Oh, sure.
I'd love to be the person to make those matches happen. Or, you know, back in the Monday Night War era, there were a lot of matches that never happened because the people were in different companies and things like that. But to be able to make those things happen would be pretty awesome, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And what geek occupation would you not like to do, though?
I guess I would not want to be one of the a person at a convention that I guess they're volunteers usually. I don't really know what their title is, but the people that check the badges and say this room is full or whatever just seems like it would take away from the fun of being at a convention.
Mm-hmm. That totally makes sense. Are you ready for your final question, sir? What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
I didn't have time to think about a lot of these, so let's see.
It's all right. We're getting they're getting what's on your mind.
Mm-hmm,
exactly. Yeah. Well, I feel like I kind of maybe already answered that with some of these, but
oh yeah,
I'm trying to think of a different one.
Getting into the ring with The Undertaker?
Well, I don't know if I'd want to get in the ring with him, but...
or even...
Maybe...
I'll be nice to you. We'll go Brock Lesnar.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I'd want to get in the ring with anybody, really. But maybe managing someone like that would be good. Or just...
Paul Bearer's younger brother.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a clever name for Paul Bearer's replacement or whatever.
Jonathan Bearer? No.
Junior Bearer.
Junior Bearer. Younger Bearer. Yogi Bearer. There we go.
Yogi Bearer.
Well, Jonathan, you've made it through the Geeksty. Congratulations, sir.
Thank you. I hope I did okay.
I think he passed the audition. We can keep him on the other podcast. Mr. Mike, tell the young man what he's won.
He has won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, including the show that you are currently on.
Wow.
Yes. It's a value easily worth $16.04. Easily.
Easily. Wow. We're going up in the world again.
You know, it's 2017. We're strong, baby.
That is awesome.
We are definitely happy that you could join us. And for those people out there, where can they find your work online?
Well, wrestlingwithpopculture.com is, I guess, the best place, even though, like I said, I'm a little behind on that. I've worked on a few things since I got into the film industry, but the only one that has seen the light of day so far was Stranger Things.
Awesome.
And so you see my name in the credits of the last two episodes of the first season, of course. And I was actually on a panel at Dragon Con about Stranger Things, which was kind of weird because it was just me and the lady that runs the X-Files track.
Right.
And no one from the show. Well, I mean, I am sort of from the show, but none of the actors or anything like that were there. And it was a packed room that we had to turn people away, and people wow. were in costumes.
A little bit of celebrity then, huh?
Well, they were just there because they were fans of the show and wanted to talk about it, but they weren't there Well, maybe they were there because I was there, but I wasn't advertised, so I guess it probably isn't very likely. But
that's pretty cool. That's nice to be part of that.
So watch that if you haven't already on Netflix, and check out WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. And on Twitter, I am at WrestlePopCulture, C-U-L-T-R, because of the limited characters.
Limited characters, right.
There's a Wrestling with Pop Culture Facebook page, and on Instagram, I am Wrestling with Pop Culture as well.
Awesome. And of course, you can be heard periodically at the ESO Wrestling Roundtable. So very cool to have you join us, and we'll have links to all those in our show notes so people can check you out.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Let's take a break, and we will be back in a moment. We are talking Red Dwarf, folks. Coming back to us after a slightly long delay is Red Dwarf Season 11. It's been a while since we've actually talked about the wonderful folks from the fine mining ship Red Dwarf, and we have a great crew to join us to talk all about that. Joining us, of course, returning to the show is Mr. Robert Ray. Welcome, sir.
Oh, welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Are you, psyched to have Red Dwarf back?
Absolutely. I've always enjoyed seeing these ragtag bunch of bozos just bumble around through space and do whatever they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we also are joined by a friend of the show, Nathan Laws.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Nathan. It is always good. And I know you have a big announcement, but we're going to keep it to the end of the show.
All right. Spoilers.
Exactly. Spoilers, darling. So Red Dwarf is back, and everyone here has watched Series 10, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And Mikey, you saw it finally, right?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't on the last time we did a review of the series, which Series 10, I think, aired in 2012.
Yes.
I for some reason was not on the episode that we did that. I mean, it was a while back.
You were on assignment, sir. That's right.
That's right. I was on assignment, but I must not have known, because I didn't even watch Series 10, because I hadn't realized I hadn't seen it until a while back. So I was like, oh, we're gonna cover the new season, and I haven't seen 10 yet. So I had to binge watch last weekend, or 2 weeks ago, I had to binge watch 10 and then binge watch 11 as well. So I'm all caught up now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it was interesting to get caught back up. And a little editor's note right here. They did film Series 12 also at the same time. So we will be getting that next year later this year from what I hear. And so we have 6 more episodes coming, and when they come out here in the States, we will be up here to review it. So right off the bat, I loved what they did with Series 10. I thought they captured a lot of the magic that they did, from the old series, because when we had done reviews, and also like Robert and I have done various Red Dwarf panels at Dragon Con together.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have.
And we've talked about how in the later seasons of Red Dwarf, like Series 7 and 8, it felt like they were kind of dragging.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when they did the Back to Earth storyline, we were really worried. But 10 recaptured a lot of the magic. Did they capture it, though, for Series 11? Did it continue? Let's go right off the bat. What do you guys think?
I felt like 11 was a bit of a step back from 10. I don't think that we hit the doldrums of, to me, season 7 was the absolute low point. I felt like 8 did improve slightly over 7, but yeah, I felt like a lot of these stories were variations on stories that we had seen before. And to me, it made it it made it fall a little flat, even though they were funny in and of themselves and they were okay. It was the fact that I just felt like I've seen this story already. Do something new. I mean, to me, the one exception to that was, I think it was called Crisis, which is the one where Crichton goes through his midlife crisis. That one felt kind of new and fresh to me, and I loved that one from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
yeah, that one was the, I thought Crisis was actually the high point. I was wondering why they didn't end the series with that one, the season with that, because I thought it was perfect way to end it. And then, cause the one that came after, and they were showing these in an odd order. I thought it just seemed odd, like the order that they were in on the DVD. And I didn't know if that was the same order that they aired. And then I looked on Wikipedia and they were showing them in different order than what they were produced in, and it kind of felt that way. It didn't, they just didn't feel like they gelled as six episodes together.
No. And I thought the weakest one was the final episode, truthfully, the Can of Worms.
Yeah.
And as we said in the beginning of this episode, folks, we are going to spoil it. So if you haven't seen series 11 yet, please watch it and then listen.
Yeah, I mean, they've shown a variation of those polymorph things. I think that's what they're called before. I mean, we've seen them so many times. They've done so many different episodes with them. And so just the only variation.
Even they seem like it was like, oh, another polymorph. You know, it's like they didn't even seem like it was a big threat. They were just kind of like, oh, what a pain. I know the
only new joke was that the cat was a virgin. Yes. You know, that joke. And then the rest of it felt like, we've done all this before. Even the thing with them, like, turning Lister into like a cold-hearted, you know, like a murderer, that had been done in a previous episode before too. So
and that had no payoff. Like they did it and then they kind of forgot they did it.
Right.
Yeah, that was sloppy. And there was a few of those that were kind of sloppy. But look, I mean, all is said and done, I still enjoyed all six. I was glad to see that. I mean, it's hard to, you know, to explain to people who are not familiar with Red Dwarf, because it's, I think it's got to be not only one of the longest running sci-fi franchises, period, but it's definitely, I think, the longest running comedic sci-fi franchise that's out there.
Oh, sure. And for a show that's been canceled so many times to be brought back so many times, I mean, it's been on hiatus like five or six times and it just keeps coming back.
And even though the four guys are, you know, somewhat older and they're obviously just getting together to do these on a low, low budget, they very rarely have any other, you know, guest stars or anything like that. I think they do a pretty good job at being entertaining and it's always fun to watch these characters. I've gotten to like the characters so much, which is such an important thing, especially with TV. I mean, you can have the crappiest plot, but as long as the characters are fun to watch, it still feels like you're visiting old friends again.
Yeah, they did the important thing and got rid of Kachansky, which was the one character that I didn't like. I do miss Holly. I wish Holly would come back.
Something thereof, because I do think the boys need somebody to kind of break the testosterone factor and also just kind of keep them in line. Because otherwise, sometimes I wonder, like, why do they feel compelled to do anything?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It was interesting because even how not great this series was, it still was better than the Kachansky era.
Yes. Yes.
I don't even know that they mentioned her this season.
No.
No. They didn't mention her at all, no.
Which is amazing, because having just watched 10, they mentioned her a few times, and I'm like, oh, she's coming back. Are they going to have her do something with her? No, and they never did, but.
Yeah, the whole, like, triangle they set up between Kachansky and Crichton and Lister was just weird and didn't work.
No, not at all.
It just made you hate all the characters. And with Rimmer gone in that seventh season, you know, and the cat being downplayed a lot, it was difficult. It was hard going.
Well, but there was no chemistry between Lister and Kachansky in this version, because the original actress who played Kachansky was great with him.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But the actress, you know, Chloe, there just was not any, you know, with Craig, there was no chemistry at all. And she just came off as a snotty, snooty, posh person.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, her, it just didn't fit with the comic timing, anything. So when they got to this season and announced that, you know, it was coming back, I was glad to see it was just the four.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, helped a lot.
Yeah, and they're saying that 12 is going to be the end. So I don't know if that means they've planned an actual last episode that's a definitive period on the series, or if it's going to leave it open-ended. But it'll be interesting to see what they do with that as well.
Well, they have already tried that once before when they had something called The End, you know. But right. How can they do another end? Because they only had one end, you know?
Well, exactly. But even the last episode of season 10 was called The Beginning.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's, it almost seemed like Rimmer had passed the point at that point and actually had a backbone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was disappointed that the characterization of Rimmer had slid back to the familiar, because even though I love Rimmer and I think he's hilarious, I would have liked to have seen a little bit of growth, which we didn't get at all in this season. He was the same Rimmer that we've seen since the beginning.
Yeah, even when he was in the episode Officer Rimmer, I'm like, this is the Rimmer we've seen before. Like you've stated before, a lot of these things we've seen before, but this episode just makes it seem like he's a Pratt basically, but he's not he's worse of a Pratt than he was, even though he's evolved from that. He's gone past that point, and he's regressing back to it because he's been promoted as an officer, and this is what he's always wanted to do, and he regressed back to what he was in the beginning of the series. So,
definitely Officer Rimmer, that episode is the epitome of that. It's just like, because you know, sometimes they do a great job because he's annoying as hell. You would not want to be on a ship with him, but yet they do make him sympathetic occasionally. And that kind of pulls you through. And yet with Officer Rimmer, all you just wanted to do was just blast him out an airlock. I mean, all of them, like, just flush them all down. And yeah, usually they give us a little something more, but they didn't with that one.
Exactly. Yeah. And we've already seen this kind of happen already with Rimmer World and also the amusement park ride where they went through and it was all Rimmer.
And Me Squared was one where Rimmer had to deal with another hologram of himself. So we've seen the whole idea of multiple Rimmers before. You know, so it just seemed like, we know this is a bad idea. We've seen this already. Why are we doing the same story? I mean, the only thing that was funny and new about that one was the idea of printed people.
Yeah, the 3D printer joke was really funny, especially when it jammed in the beginning and the guy came out and he was all deformed. I thought that was really clever. But then, that was it. I mean, that was the joke. And then the rest of it was just a Rimmer fest.
Exactly, the Rimmer Club. And it was just like, oh, God.
And then the Rimmer Monster. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it how they ended it just did not feel right. You know, with them getting ready to shoot it and everything, the Rimmer Monster. And it was just like, and they started opening fire. And then the episode ended. It was like, was that a bad edit or something? it just did not feel right.
It was supposed to end funny, but it ended all so serious, and it just didn't work to me at all.
Yeah.
No, it would have been funny if they would have ended it with, oh, wait, we can't destroy it. You don't have a pen to make your list of things you have to do. And then it would have been funny if they all pulled out their pens, and then that's how it would end. Like that. Instead, it had them opening fire. It was kind of dark with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, you know, sometimes they go dark, and that's dark comedy, and that's okay. But in this case, it was flat.
Yeah, I liked the episode where they went back in time and science was illegal.
Right.
Well, that was fun.
That was a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first episode, Twenica. Yep. And that was, I mean, obviously with one of the standout episodes last season was is it called Trojan, right? The one, or no? What's is it? Lemons? Lemons, right? Where they go back and they find Jesus, or quote unquote Jesus. So there's a, you know, so I guess, let's put that in the repertoire as well. And this one was, you know, it's cool seeing the guys, you know, dress up and do all that kind of stuff and have some fun that way. And I love the idea of the science speakeasy. I thought that was really funny. And the woman they got to play the scientist there, the main scientist there was really cool. I thought she really sold it well.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did. And I loved how, you know, she was like, oh, this theorem and that, you know, and she was just like doing it. And she was, and then when they were up there playing the music and it was like, and then they looked at her, at the scientist and said, oh, I'm not that type of girl. What do you think? And they were good stories, but the stories, it almost felt like, and I'm not bashing on it because any Red Dwarf is good Red Dwarf compared to a lot of stuff out there.
Well, I was going to say that. Maybe, but
well, yes, I know. Unless you're counting season 7 or 8, but a lot of it, though, it seemed forced with this season. It's like they had a successful 10th season, and I think every one of those stories were stellar.
Yes.
And I was real disappointed with a lot of this season after I watched it, and I didn't want to say anything to Mike because I lent him my DVDs for it, and it was just like going through and it's like, maybe I need to watch this again or, you know, something. It was just like, it left a bad taste in my mouth almost all the episodes.
Well, I think for me, there were two standout episodes. I think the first one, Twenica, and then Crisis, I thought was, I know we'll talk about that because that one I thought was really fun. And it had a Douglas Adams feel to it.
Oh, very much so.
Which I always appreciate that English, you know, sci-fi humor. I think the low point was Officer Rimmer, and the others were just kind of there. I don't think they were particularly bad. I just think they were, you know, just kind of there. So
I actually liked that. To me, the second best one was Sam Sarah.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
I like any episode where you don't get it until the end. And, you know, they set it all up with Rimmer having all the bad roles at the game and everything. And then, like, as it's sort of like, it sort of comes together as you go through the story of what's going on there. And it, the ending kind of puts everything else in context. And, you know, I loved that. I thought that was hilarious. You know, that was funny. But again, it just felt kind of old to me. Like it was like a riff on things that they had done before, but otherwise I thought the episode itself was really good. And I liked how it kind of resolved itself.
Especially when they introduced the Karma Drive, which is really bizarre.
Oh, the Karma Drive was awesome.
I love the idea of the Karma. I really like the idea of the Karma Drive.
That's a Douglas Adamsy sort of idea.
Absolutely. Exactly. You can see him doing it.
The execution, maybe not as strong as you guys, but I like the premise a lot.
I liked it, but I also liked how they tied the flashbacks in it really well.
Yes, yes.
And because they used to do that on Red Dwarf when they used to show, especially the first two seasons, when they used to show the old crew and stories like that. And it felt very familiar when they were showing the crew of that ship and then flashing back to the present. And it was funny as hell when they showed all the different skeletons doing all the sex stuff.
Yeah. First I looked at that, I was going, wait a minute, what am I thinking? Oh my goodness gracious.
Exactly. It's like, I was glad I wasn't watching that one with William.
No.
Because I was trying to figure out, I was like, you know, once they reveal the Karma Drive, I'm like, but wait, how does anything that's happened make sense? And then they're like, oh, well, it was inverted. And then it's like, oh, okay, now I'm getting what's going on here.
Exactly. And I love how the Karma Drive, you know, its people went into stasis, but the Karma Drive got them at the end, turned them to dust.
Because they did a good thing.
Exactly. And so there was like high points on it, and it was great. You know, there were things I really liked seeing about it. I liked the whole thing with the kidneys, you know, with.
Oh, give and take. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was okay. It had some premise. I did think that the maniac robot there, the one that actually like operated him, he was like the creepiest thing I think they've ever done.
Yeah.
That's the stuff of nightmares. That's creepy. That was creepy. And it was supposed to be, I guess, dark, funny, creepy, but to me it was just plain creepy.
And the whole storyline on that.
I think, you know, at the end of it, I thought part of it I thought was kind of cool. But then I thought, well, what it would have made it funny to me is if they had been the ones to remove his kidneys and then just put it back, like the robot had done nothing. Like they had been the ones to take out his kidneys, and that's why he needed kidneys, and that's why they had to put him back. So I thought that joke would have been a lot funnier, but because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. Because obviously he had no kidneys, so I don't know what blew up.
Right. Well, the only thing I could think is that they put something in him that was just fake kidneys, like something that just looked kidney-esque, and the robot took that out. And that's the only thing I could think of too.
If that was clearer, that would have been funny. Like, because the whole thing, they just went back in time just to take his kidneys out and put them back in. I thought that would have been clever if they had done that, but instead it ended. Because the snack machine joke got old, like after the second time.
Well, yeah, because they find out fairly early on that it's just a snack machine. It doesn't. I thought that was going to be like the big like punchline at the end, is like it was going to operate on him and everything, and it was going to turn out, oh, it's just a snack machine, ha ha ha, you know. But instead, no, it kind of went in a different direction. So yeah, it didn't
really pay off. It was really weak, the whole snack machine.
But the scenes between like Rimmer and not Rimmer, but the scenes between Cat. Trying to get Cat to donate was fun. The fact that Cat's, you know, I mean, there were times when, you know, a couple times here where, you know, Cat acted like a cat, like they just don't do anything for anybody. And I thought that was cool. Cause one thing I thought about, the, as much as I like season 10, I didn't think Cat had a lot of great, great moments in season 10, but I did think that in season 11, I think he does have some better moments there.
Well, yeah, that's been a trend that's been going on since like midway through the season, that the cat's been like toned down on the whole catness. But yeah, like even when I was watching it with my wife like pointed that out too. Like even in Can of Worms, which wasn't our favorite story, but the whole thing of the polymorph looking like a female cat and everything, and the way they were acting off of each other, like, oh, this is what about this bit right here? Oh, this is mine too. You know, all that stuff. Exactly. That was classic Cat. Yep. You know, and that was really fun, and it was nice to see all that again.
Mm-hmm. See, that part was great, and I was actually disappointed where they didn't have Cat finding his people again, because I think season 5 or season 6, they actually had one of the unfinished scripts that they had where Cat actually found his people, and they actually had it storyboarded. And Chris Berry actually read the voices for it and had it as an extra on the DVD. And it's pretty darn awesome. And I was hoping they would have done something like that for this. And obviously they didn't. And they made it the polymorph. And it was just like, yay, not.
Right.
So, wow. Well, this episode's not going the way I was thinking it was going to go. like a typical Red Dwarf thing.
We all liked Crisis.
I was going to say, well, now we can talk about Crisis. And Crisis was the gem of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at the end, when they actually talk to the universe and it sounds like Morgan Freeman.
Perfect.
That was perfect.
Yes.
Whoever they found to do that voiceover work, I mean, you could tell it wasn't Morgan Freeman, but man, did he have the Morgan Freeman down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole idea that they actually initiate a midlife crisis in the universe itself.
Exactly. That's really Douglas Adams. And that's so good. That's so good.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I thought was really funny was when Crichton's like trying to, you know, he's the car analogy of, he finds the new body that's like the, you know, the hot sexy body. He looks just like he's Baymax from Big Hero 6 when he has like the red armor on.
I thought it was a mix between Baymax and Iron Man.
Right.
But yeah, I didn't know if that was deliberate or not.
Oh, yes.
I thought it was. Yeah.
Oh, it had to be. But the whole thing with the red sports car look anyway is what they were going for me, you know, who actually hit a milestone birthday this last week and, you know, actually, you know, knows all about that mid-age crisis thing. And it basically became, you know, very apparent that's what he was going for, was the shiny sports car look. But he did look like Baymax. And it was interesting because the robot that they met sounded just like Crichton originally sounded when they first met him.
Yeah.
And even the mannerisms in a lot of ways was like the original Crichton.
Yeah, he was much
I wondered if they only had one suit because like, cause they were like, cause neither of them are in that same suit at the same, like at the same time. So I'm like, I wonder if the other one was, if Butler was using Crichton's suit, just because to save money or whatever, because I'm like, this is, yeah, it's just funny.
Well, I mean, I love the subverted expectations. This is what Red Dwarf does really well, where you think they're going to find a robot that's just like Crichton was when they first found Crichton, you know, doddering over and taking care of, you know, dead people, because that's all he knows how to do is take care of people. But instead, he's doing way better than Crichton ever did.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. And
yeah, he's two models behind.
Right. And he's painting and writing and doing all these friends with everybody. He's diplomatic, you know, it's and Rimmer.
He's got the universe kind of on speed dial.
Yeah.
And I loved it. It's like, you know, oh, I can upgrade your engines real quick. And it's, oh, that would take forever to do. And he does like five buttons and it's like, it's done.
Yeah.
No, it was, I think that was the highlight of the season. And
if you were going to do a show on Midlife Crisis with those four characters, Crichton is the only one that you can do that with, because the others, it just wouldn't work.
Well, didn't they already do that with Lister last season, with the one where he pretends like he's his own son?
Well,
it was kind of like that, but
I don't know. I thought Fathers and Sons was brilliant. I thought it was really fun and dealt with more like being a deadbeat dad than a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
The stuff between like his videos to himself and everything like that were just so hilarious and well done. I thought that was really the fact, because yeah, they don't play up the fact that he's his own father or whatever, and that really played up that. To an extent where it didn't get old. It wasn't just a one joke that they went through the whole thing over and over and over again. And they played on it, and I thought that was cool. And same way with Crisis. I mean, he's got them in life crisis, but they don't like really overplay it.
No, it was just subtle enough, but right there in your face. But it wasn't overkill, and that was the best part about it.
Right, because you keep on thinking of how, and the story kept pivoting, and that was the great thing about it, because then you think, oh, Butler did make a mistake because there was the engine failure, and then it turns out at the end that no, Butler did that deliberately to give Crichton a chance to talk to the universe, so the whole thing kept, and you know, every time you like subvert expectations like that, that's what's really funny, is because you're expecting one thing and it throws something else at you, so it just kept the story kind of alive, whereas the ones like Officer Rimmer, which are just like the same joke over and over and over again, it doesn't work that well because you've already, you know, played that hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the show really works well when our faithful heroes survive things, but they still are no better off than they were. You know, in some cases they're off worse. They're worse off, but yet they keep surviving. Because you know, you just keep thinking, like, they get chances. It's sort of like Gilligan in the Island, right? They keep getting chances to get off the island, but they just never, no matter what happens, no matter how hopeful it is, they just get the rug to pulled out from under each episode. And that's kind of the fun aspect of it. But sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes it does.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, the concept of the series is horrible if you think about it. I mean, Lister is literally the last man alive, although they keep on finding offshoot human-esque beings. But, you know, he's the last man alive on a 3-million-year journey back to Earth that he'll probably never see. You know, just he's trying to keep himself sane, you know, with, you know, a hologram, a robot, and a mutant cat, mm-hmm. you know, so it's a pretty nasty concept when you think about it.
I thought the designs of the different space stations they found, though, were pretty awesome this year.
They did a pretty good job with the space scenes and everything. It's all the modeling and everything they've done, and like you said, the internal the interior stuff and everything. It's just they just did very well. The lighting was of course a little darker in some spots, but yet I think they actually worked pretty well with where they were.
I love how in every episode they use the same stock footage of the elevator going up.
Yeah.
over and over.
I actually think the darker lighting works better because it hides more.
Yeah.
And I think that's when you have a lower budget show, that's a better thing to have is, you know, let the shadows work their magic and keep people from seeing how, you know, shoddy the sets actually are. Because, yeah, I thought that it looked great. I mean, it certainly was a huge leap between season 8 and season 10. Mm-hmm. You know, when they started making the series again in this decade, you know, how wonderful everything looked. Yeah, I mean, this year also with the exteriors and all the space stuff, it looked really good. I mean, I was watching it in high def for the first time. Even season 10 I saw on a DVD rather than a Blu-ray. But this season I watched on Blu-ray. So that might be part of it. But I watched The Red Dwarf and I was like, whoa, The Red Dwarf looks really, really good. You know, even that old design looks really sharp.
Mm-hmm. No, it was interesting. And the model work for the ship looked great. And it was nice to see that they didn't have all Starbug or all Red Dwarf. They traded off between the two. But yeah, they crashed the ship once again. You know, they have to do it at least once a season. I love how they jump started Crichton though with his nipples.
Yeah. Oh god. And how could you tell which one's positive, which one's negative? You could see it. I saw it.
It's like one is red, one is black. Duh.
Bingo. And if you know how to jump start a car, you know how to jump start Crichton.
Exactly. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I can't believe I'm hanging out like this, sir.
Oh, modesty.
I think they do an incredible job with making the show sort of at least universal to an extent. Some British comedies you can enjoy on one level because they're humorous, and then on another level, if you know what's going on in Britain at the time, or you know your British history, or you're an Anglophile, you can get certain jokes. But I noticed that Red Dwarf seems to go out of their way to every once in a while there'll be a British joke, but you're like, but not very often. And a lot of times there's a lot of American references in there. And I don't know if they are catering to an American audience, but I do sense that they try to keep it a little less British.
That's interesting because they don't show it here in the States.
I know that's, but I mean, I guess they know that they've got a market and they do intend the sale of DVDs and whatnot. So I do wonder about that. But that's why I was kind of, you know, I was kind of thought I was going to watch it and there'd be like all these British references and all that kind of stuff. And yet, you know, I kind of have a keen eye for a lot of that stuff. And I don't remember there being a lot over the last two seasons, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the show now has taken on that cult status where there's even been conventions and such in the States in the past. So, you know, it could be that they've actually thought of that with these later seasons and decided that, hey, we'll make it for more of an international market. Because I'm thinking about it, and I feel like the show in the past, in the older ones, did have more British references. But you're right, thinking back on this season, I don't recall anything other than Lister refers to soccer as football, which is natural over there. You know, right. I can't think of anything particularly British about any of these episodes either.
Yeah. And they, you know, they still don't mind calling cigarettes fags. So they, you know, that was pretty evident in one episode in particular. But so there's still a lot of, you know, a lot of English references, but it's not that deep. And certainly there was never a point where I can't remember any point this season where I looked at it and go, oh, I don't get that. I don't get that joke. Now, some jokes didn't work, but I also thought that there was at least a couple times this season where they went a lot more blue than I'm used to them going. I don't mind them having the sex jokes, obviously, but I thought this season there was a couple in particular that I was like, whoa, this is really like a little bit over the top for them.
Can you think of an example?
Well, the skeletons in the sex poses was one where I was like, whoa, that's kind of, you know. And then there was the one scene, is it, I'm not sure which episode it's in, but it's there's an episode and a scene where they're on the space bug and Rimmer starts talking about the dream that he had.
Oh yes,
yeah. The dream.
And I was like, whoa, this is getting a lot more graphic than they need to go. Like it seemed like even the cast was kind of like, we don't really know what to do with that, so we're just going to move on.
Yeah,
see, I thought the dream was funny. I thought that one was.
I'm not saying it wasn't funny. I just it just surprised me because I'm not used to Red Dwarf like going that far, you know?
Yeah.
No, well, exactly. It goes farther.
If the kid was watching the show, they wouldn't know what his dream meant. I mean, only people who know a little bit about dream imagery, you know, would understand what that's all about. Uh-huh. Yeah. And the same thing with the skeletons. If a kid saw that, you know, depending on the age, but preteen, so, I'm thinking preteen.
Sure.
You know, I mean, what, you know, just the skeletons are just lying about in a weird way. I mean, what's.
Well, exactly. That's how they died. They just landed that way.
Right, exactly.
That's my story, and I'm sticking with it, kid. So, yeah, it was interesting. There were some risque stuff, but they've always touched on it throughout the whole series.
Oh, yeah, they're not afraid of lowbrow humor.
No, or even, you know, the whole thing at the end with Cat's dream at the very end of the... Yeah. Of the episode with the polymorph where he has the two other cats in the bed with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you know, yeah,
sometimes I just shake my head. I'm like, man, the days of Benny Hill are still with us. Mm-hmm.
And he wakes up and it's like, this is a dream, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay. Well, that's fine with me.
It still counts.
Right. Exactly.
It
still counts.
It still counts.
And I don't know.
Is that what we told each other in high school? Okay.
Even though I think that it would have shredded the show's continuity, I think it would have been funnier if he actually did have two cat women stashed in his room that the others didn't know about. But yeah. that would have not made sense at all with the rest of the show. But I think making it a dream made it less funny.
Yeah.
It would have been different. Yeah, I thought they were going to be like, oh, he does have, you know. The girl from Canada does exist.
Well, because we all knew from the get-go that all the cat people had left the ship and he was the only one left besides...
The old guy.
The old guy, yeah. I can't remember his name. But, of course, he's totally the donut on his head, but that's beside the point. But, you know, they were all gone and they were the only two that were left. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. It made more sense to me that when it said, oh, it was a dream, it's like, well, where did these cat people come from? Oh, it's a dream. Okay, that's fine.
Right.
I'm good with that.
It's interesting because
Michelle asked me something and I must say I didn't know the answer to this and I haven't really researched it. So forgive me. But you guys might know mm-hmm. is the laugh track is generated after the fact, right?
I believe it is.
I mean, it's not filmed in front of a live audience, right?
It had been for a couple years. I don't think it is anymore. Yeah.
No, I don't think it is now. But yeah, it was at one time. Yeah.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, she was watching a little bit of it and she said something about, oh, this is an awful laugh track. And then just like,
left it is.
I was like, I suppose, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think they did, was it the Back to Earth that didn't have one? Like, there's been a period where they didn't have it. Right?
Oh, God, I don't think so. Yeah, there was a period that they didn't have it, but I'm trying to remember exactly when they started and when they stopped.
If only we had a computer that could do something like that.
Yeah. And especially since it's no longer funded by the BBC, it's now funded by Dave. So Dave's got a different kind of budget from what the BBC actually had. So they probably just stuck with a laugh track and say, okay, this is it. This is what we'll do. That's it. You know.
Nope, hold on. I am finding out as we speak.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Research.
Of course.
Research while podcasting. How about that?
To actually speak from a position of authority. Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
God has spoken.
Okay. The universe has spoken. The eighth series was recorded in front of a studio audience.
That makes sense.
I think the first two seasons. And I think the first two seasons were also.
Okay.
Yeah, it says with Back to Earth, the episodes were not filmed in front of a studio audience, but unlike the seventh series, it was not shown to an audience at a later date to record the audience laughter.
Okay.
So I don't know about, but I don't know about 10 and 11. It doesn't say anything about, doesn't say anything about them.
Where Back to Earth had been shot on a closed set and on location for the full series revival, that's series 10 and 11 and 12, the show went back to recording in front of a live studio audience.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
So, and it went more with the, that's when they went back to the classic setup. And it kind of makes sense that way.
Yeah.
So seeing how series 10 was, and also series, 11, how the sets looked more like, plays in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm.
So,
they didn't have like all the different sets. Like you could tell it was higher budget in Back to Earth. They went, they went full on location. Hell, they even went to Coronation Street.
Yes.
So,
which was surprising, yeah.
And then the Blade Runner set. And So, yeah, it was interesting to see. And I like seeing, that the characters are still together. The chemistry between the four of them are great still.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yes.
That you can't deny. But, it's interesting, Danny is starting to really start showing his age, but you could see all the how much makeup he's wearing as Kat.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, especially around his eyebrows. From the Can of Worms episode, you could definitely see a lot of the makeup, like you were saying, around his eyes too, for sure.
In one of the episodes, he says something about not having a wrinkle, and I'm like, you've got a few. I don't know if you're aware that we're watching this in HD, but that still doesn't really work.
Yeah. Chris Berry, though, has done a very good job. He's obviously gained a little weight, but he still looks like Rimmer. He's still looking pretty, pretty close to how he looked, has always looked.
Yeah, a little bit of weight, his hairline's, risen. But he's a hologram, you could blame it on bad programming.
Yeah, see, I was wondering if he wore a wig, because to me, I didn't think his hairline had receded all that much, and I was wondering if maybe he has a hair, because I don't know what he looks like, normally, but I was wondering if maybe he was wearing a hairpiece to keep his hair, where it used to be.
No, there's slight, and also, but Craig looks great.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's interesting because he left his role on Coronation Street to film series 11 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be interesting after this if he'll go back. And do you think, this is off the cuff, do you think they should end it with series 12, or do you think they should go past? Because they don't have any plans as of yet.
Well, it's hard to say without seeing season 12. I mean, if 12 goes the way this one does, and it's kind of like, they're just kind of, I don't want to say phoning it in, but they're just kind of doing it without really making any headway or doing anything amazing. I could definitely see, look, it's one of those things where it's like, if it's their last one, I can understand that they're getting older, et cetera, et cetera. But as long as these four want to keep doing it, I say let them do it, because it's like you said, it's fun watching these four characters interact. They know their characters. Heck, I'm sure even if they didn't have a script in front of them, if they were just reading the phone book, it would be entertaining, because they just know each other and they work so well together. I mean, when any of the pair up any of the two of them, or three of them in a room in a scene together, and they just play off each other very well.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Yeah, I appreciated that this season, actually, because they actually took some great pains to do the because usually it's Lister with Crichton or Lister yes. with Rimmer. But yeah. you don't usually get Lister with Kat and Rimmer with Crichton. And they made sure to give us that. They gave it to us in Samsara, and I want to say in one of the other ones too.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did it twice. Yes.
Yeah, I think back.
They did it in yes.
Yeah. So at least we got that other pairing that we don't normally get, you know, at the two and two, so that we could, you know, get a little different interaction.
Nope, exactly, and it was good because it showed that the actors could act in not the usual pairings.
Mm-hmm.
And that it was easy enough for them to be able to do something like that. You know what really freaked me out, though, if you think about it? This show is almost 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just worked that out myself. It's 28 years old.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
which is amazing for only being on season 11.
Well, technically, you know, season 9 is still floating out there somewhere in vaporware. Yeah. That's been the running joke.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that is pretty darn cool. Would you, you know, recommend this to people to pick up? Or if you're not a Red Dwarf fan, would you start them with the season? Or would you tell them to go older?
Oh, I'd definitely tell people to go older. I used to do that. In fact, some of my friends in high school, I showed the first couple of seasons to get them into it because I thought the show was so funny.
It depends on the person, but maybe you could start them with 10. Certainly that first episode of 10, you know, where they go back in time and visit Jesus. I think everybody can sort of grasp onto that one. But as far as getting the actual, like, you know, what's going on with these characters, I think you do have to go earlier because it establishes a tone and it establishes like sort of who these characters are right in the beginning. And I think you need to have a little bit of that going forward, because if you just jump in, you're kind of like, what's up with these four? You know, but when you know their history together, yeah. I think it makes it it's more compelling to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Agreed. Because you didn't know what their first they didn't know how they interact with each other until the very beginning, when everybody was dead and Lister was by himself, and all these other characters all of a sudden started showing up, and Crichton didn't show up until much later than that. But still, they had to know what these characters, you know, mean, why they work with each other, even though they almost hate each other at some point.
Well, the show originally started, if you think about it, was The Odd Couple in Space.
Exactly. Right, right. Mm-hmm. And then it also starts off, I mean, much like, and I, you know, I keep throwing out Hitchhiker's Guide, but it, Douglas Adams and everything. But really, you know, the opening scene of Hitchhiker's Guide starts with the Earth blowing up. The first episode of Red Dwarf starts with one of our main characters killing off the entire crew. And so you're kind of like, well, why do I care about this guy? Like, you know, like it really leads, you really have to like buy into it from the beginning, the premise, I think, to go along with the rest of it. Nope. Because if you don't get it, because once you like those are two things that you like when you're starting a show or starting a concept, you probably don't start with, because people have a negative reaction to that sort of thing usually. So if you can get over that hump, then you've got people along for the ride. And I think that's because those are big humps to get over.
No, very much so.
That's, you know, it's one thing to just like say, oh, well, they're, you know, he's a slob and he's not. But I mean, you know, when you think about it, it's like, no, they're responsible for like hundreds and thousands of people dying. Like, it's just like that's including themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's a hard thing to get over. And but, you know, it works. And then, you know, I think that Dave is still the main guy that you care about and that you watch. Not to say that the others aren't equally as important, but I think Dave's the one that you have to, that you connect with the most on the show.
Okay. Mainly because he's the only one that's human, pretty much.
Right. But he's also the only one that's really like, I mean, you know, he's a slob and everything like that, but he's pretty much the, you know, he's the, like the Oscar Madison, the guy that's like, yeah, he's not only human, but he's really human. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly.
I mean, it's true, but at the same time, I have a lot of sympathy for Rimmer. Because even though he is kind of a jerk and puts on all these airs and stuff, some of the things about his life, you know, kind of resonate, you know. And so I feel for Rimmer also, whereas the cat and Crichton are more just kind of silly characters.
Right, right.
Rimmer does have a lot of humanity to him, even though he is a hologram. But he started as a human. And that's why I liked the ending of season 10 so much, is I felt like Rimmer taking a step forward was like a huge win for him. And I kind of took part in that as well. So I do think that Rimmer is also...
I love how he used the snack robot as his psychiatrist.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. He unloaded everything, and it just put literally everything to the snack robot. And like, and then he figured out what his problem was all along, and the robot didn't say anything to him.
Yeah, but he still doesn't really do anything about it.
No, he didn't.
he still doesn't grow from it. That is one of the things that is kind of, especially in this day and age, right? Because even Red Dwarf still applies the rules that were in the 80s, where it's just a sitcom, nothing really changes. You know, you hit the reset button at the beginning of every episode so that people can jump in and just enjoy every episode to an extent by itself without like a huge continuity. Now, obviously, there is continuity, but not in the sense that there's really a lot of growth because, you know, the jokes have to work. You know, and a lot of they're not as bad as obviously when the show first started, they had to make sure that everybody said, you know, Smeg at least six times. And they had to make sure that those Red Dwarf jokes and phrases were in every episode. So you don't have to do that anymore. But still, they do have that same kind of format.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So. You know, of course, you'll be able to pick up Red Dwarf Series 11 up on the ESO Amazon store or just right off of Amazon itself. So please feel free to go there off of the ESO webpage. We definitely would love to hear from you guys and hear what you guys thought about this season. Were we off base or did we hit it right on the head? Or are you going to just tell us to smeg off? Let's find out. ESOpodcast at gmail.com. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a moment.
Welcome to a Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about the Netflix series, A Series of Unfortunate Events. Now, most children and their parents know this book series, but now Netflix has turned A Series of Unfortunate Events into a TV show starring Neil Patrick Harris and Patrick Warburton. The series follows three orphans who are forced to live with their closest, as in distance, relative Count Olaf, who is a sinister fellow. The orphans, while coming from an incredibly loving family who is rich, and also the children are incredibly smart, are put in a series of unfortunate events and circumstances, and you, as the viewer, get to watch how they attempt to make the best of it as they can. Patrick Warburton plays Lemony Snicket, the author of the books, well, the author's pen name. He narrates the stories of these poor children and their events. As the audience, you also find out a lot of other interesting facts about the children's parents and other lively characters from the series, but you'll have to go watch the show to learn more. Neil Patrick Harris plays Count Olaf, the sinister uncle of the children, and you get to see how he treats them, and it's actually really, really cool to see Neil Patrick Harris in a part like this. The show is very dark humor, but it's also based on a children's book series, so take that for how you want. I would have loved this show if I was a middle schooler, and I really enjoy it now as an adult as well. Thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Welcome back, everyone. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
This past weekend, I was at a, I guess you can call it a convention. It's a show. It's the record show that they held at the our wonderful hotel that we go to so frequently, the Marriott Century Center. They, just like the ACC Comic-Con, they have a record show there four times a year. Of course, now that vinyl is come back, there's a lot more people that attend these things, and there's a lot more vendors too. But you can find lots of vinyl, lots of great deals on vinyl, original vinyl. Of course, most of it's used, but you can get some really good deals, find some stuff, as well as they also have videos, music related videotapes and DVDs, some that are hard to get. I did have an interesting conversation with a person who sells a lot of live events. Either he records them or he obtains them other ways. Actually the guy is the guy that recorded the last, it's the same guy that recorded the last two performances that Prince did at the Fox Theater. And, he had those available for sale, but he also was, telling me, the story behind that and all that. And so really interesting stuff. So if you're into vinyl records, that kind of thing, certainly if you're in the Atlanta area, the next show I believe is in March. I believe it's March 19th. You'll have to, they have a Facebook page, so I'll put a link to that there. Check it out. I like to go to them, walk around. See if there's something that – do you have a turntable, Mike? Do you still have a record player or something you can play actually vinyl albums on?
I sure do.
Do you still have a lot of vinyl?
We probably have about 200 albums.
That's amazing. Now, these are albums that you have just kept over the years?
Oh, yeah. A mixture of both mine and Judy's collection. Dude, I still have my 45s from when I was growing up.
I still have some of those too. I still have my Doctor Who 45 with Tom Baker on the cover with the Doctor theme.
Mm-hmm.
So, great stuff. So I definitely wanted to give them a shout out because it's a great little show and not a lot of people go there. There's a pretty decent turnout, but I think it could be better if people knew about it. So definitely want to encourage people to check that out. And speaking of the same hotel and ACC, their big show is coming up during the day of the big game, and that is on February 5th. It is a Sunday. It is a super beep Sunday. So it's one of their biggest shows of the year. They obviously have a lot of dealers. They have a lot of people in costume. They have a lot of indie creators. In fact, Bobby Nash, the award-winning Bobby Nash, will be there. And a good friend of the station, J.R. Mounts, will be there. I do believe another friend of the station, Jason Flowers, will be there. James Burns, a lot of folks that we know and love. And a lot of folks that do not have tables but just show up there. It's usually a cast of familiar faces. So I definitely encourage people to come out before the big game or instead of the big game. It's during the day, so you don't have to miss anything. On the way home or wherever you're going, you can get some wings or sandwich and stuff and go tune in for the Lady Gaga halftime. If you are going and you want to meet up with us, like I said, Mike and I don't have tables. We're not usually there all day. So if you do want to meet up with us, drop us a line so we know you're going to be there and we can say howdy to you because we do love interacting with listeners. And that, like I said, is a great show to do so because there's so many people that we know from the show and from the community that are there. So please reach out to us and let us know you're going to be there. The only other show that you can find ESO personnel at in February is February 24th to the 26th in Roanoke, Virginia. And it's a show called Mysticon, which actually has been going on, I think, since 1980. So it's a sci-fi, fantasy, pop culture show in Virginia. And our own geek girl, Angela, will be at that show. So if you are planning to go there, you can say howdy to her. And then in March, we've got a few shows. March 10th through the 12th is Jolanta at guess which hotel? Yes, you're right. It's the Atlanta. Sorry, it's the Marriott Century Center, which is just north of Atlanta. It is a one of our go-to hotels to go to for these shows. Atlanta packs them in like no other show, though. It is it's crazy, but it's fun. There's a lot of toys there. Sure, it's got Joe in the title, but it's also a great toys and collectible show. It will definitely bring you back. If there's a special toy that you haven't seen in decades, chances are you will see it at this show and you will be reliving your childhood, so to speak. There's a lot of panels. Mike and I will actually be doing a panel. I don't think we've finalized that yet as to when the panel is, so we'll let you know more about that. But it's a show that we actually love to do. And our good friends, Ricky and Bambi, and the Possum Kingdom Ramblers, they do the music for the event. So there's good tunes to be had both during the day and there's an evening show as well. Definitely encourage people to check that out because it's a great show. It's a good, fun show to do. It's one of the first ones that we do a year, and it's a great time. And then at the end of March is Regeneration Who. That's in Baltimore, Maryland. You can find Angela Pritchett, our geek girl, there as well. That's a really big Doctor Who convention, probably the biggest one of the Northeast, I would say, because I know that we've talked to a couple people who promote that. Did we talk to them on this show or on ESW, Mike?
I think ESW.
Gotcha. So, they're great folks. And like I said, they've been putting on that show for a while. And I do think, isn't that the biggest one or is there another one that's big on the Northeast as well?
Oh, well, of course, Long Island Who.
Right. Of course. So that one as well. So, but in conjunction, these are the two biggest shows. So, if you're a Doctor Who fan, you want to check out that one. Certainly if you're in the Baltimore area. And then at the end of March, the 25th through the 26th is South Carolina Comic Con, SC Comic Con in Greenville, South Carolina. Good show, great show, fun show being put on by the wonderful Robert Young and the folks at Borderlands, as well as his incredible staff. It's one of our favorite shows to do every year, and I had to miss it last year, but I heard it was still amazing, and I look forward to returning there this year. And Mike and I will definitely be there. I don't think we're going to be involved with panels because I think the only things they really do for panels up there is celebrity Q&As. So, but we may take part in that, or, you know, we'll be around, we'll have tables so you can come by and say howdy. And we might even do some recording up there. So if you fancy yourself, you want to be a victim in the geek seat, we can make that happen. So that is at the end of March, and that's pretty much it. But for the next couple months, if there is a show that you want us to help promote, please reach out to us. And if there's a show that you've been to that you're so excited, you want to talk about, you want to promote it, you want to give people out there, you want to let people know about it so they can come to it next year, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So at this point, we usually wrap up the show, but we do have a very special announcement to make. Mr. Nathan, stand up to the microphone, sir. You want to make the announcement for us that you have a show finally joining the ESO network?
Yes, I have the 42 cast, which will debut this week. The 42 cast, I'm saying, is the ultimate answer to fandom, geekiness, and everything. It's a round robin kind of show, not dissimilar from the Earth Station One mothership, but my friends and I get together and discuss a different geeky topic every week, and we're kind of irreverent and make a lot of jokes, but it's a way to talk about these things in a way that works way better than the internet. Where people tend to get really upset about things. So we like having discussions, and so hopefully other people will like listening to us having discussions and having fun, and would love to have everyone tune in and give it a try.
Excellent, sir. And how can they find you?
You can find me on the webpage, which is 42cast.com. You can also find me here at the ESOpodcast.com website, as well as on Stitcher Radio and iTunes.
Yay! And how often will the podcasts be coming out?
weekly.
Oh, very, very
That's
weekly.
That's brutal, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Stay back. Don't do it. Don't do it.
We tried to warn him. We tried to give him subtle hints, but nope. He's starting his own thing, kids. Welcome, sir. We are very excited to have you on the network.
Absolutely.
I am very excited to be here.
Well, thank you. And you basically just gave your shout out for the week. So there you go.
All right.
And Mr. Robert, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for being, for bringing me here to enjoy talking Red Dwarf with you guys. I've missed being on one of your podcasts, and I don't remember the last time I was on, but it's been forever.
It's been a couple years, I think, at least.
Yeah, I know.
Probably at the last time Red Dwarf went.
Yeah, probably. Gosh, yeah, probably. I don't know.
Well, anything you want to shout out about?
Well, yesterday I was hanging out at nearby where I live, actually, ironically. The neighborhood studio was actually a good bunch of people that want to teach everybody how to act and do voice acting and all sorts of other stuff that they offer. And I was actually at their open house yesterday and actually had an amazing time talking with everybody, with Bob Carter and September Day Carter and Dan Carroll and Tom Thorne and just actually really almost got the bug bitten on me. So, you know, I may start focusing more on that in the future, I'm hoping.
That's awesome. Yeah, we actually met up with Bob Carter not that long ago when we did Nerdlanta's show.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
It was a lot of fun. Bob is just a great guy. You've heard him.
Yes.
You've heard him on the radio here in Atlanta for years.
Yep.
But he's also has done quite a few video game voices. And
yes, I know. I looked him up.
And it's just look up his IMDb, folks, and you will be amazed on who he has been. And he has started a school, and it is definitely worth checking out.
It's called The Neighborhood, right?
Yes.
The Neighborhood Studio. Yep.
Yep, exactly. So that is pretty darn awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir. And now, Mr. Mike, you made it through another one.
I did. As always, it's my pleasure, sir.
Anything you're going to shout out about, sir?
I do. I have to give a shout out to you. Look, it's been like I'm one of those rare geeks that likes the sports ball and enjoys a good sporting match. And all my years liking baseball, hockey, football, even basketball, I have never experienced two of my teams, quote unquote, my teams, playing each other in the finals, if you will. But I'll be damned if the Atlanta Falcons didn't get there and the Patriots are there once again to. I can say.
Sorry, we're not paying that licensing fee.
NFL police came over, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're matched up against one another, so I'm very excited. It'd be an interesting experience for me. I'm going in thinking, you know what? Either way, one of my teams is going to win. They both have something to prove. They both have sort of chips on their shoulder, so it should be kind of interesting. They both should be motivated, and they're really good teams, so it should be a good game. So I'm really looking forward to Sunday.
Don't say that word. you know,
it's
I'm going to have to take it out of your paycheck. I'm going to have to take it out of your paycheck, Mike.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. You can do that.
Yes. All fines go to Mr. Michael Gordon of I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my lovely wife Judy. I had, as we mentioned earlier during the show, a pretty milestone birthday, and I want to thank everything that she did, putting together an amazing birthday party / game night for us. And a few folks on the show actually showed up for it. And it was a wonderful event. We had some really bad weather here in Atlanta that weekend, and people still showed up. And I want to thank everyone for all the birthday wishes I got on Facebook, emailed to me, instant message, LinkedIn, other social medias. It was great. you know, just how much people reached out and then people coming to the party. And it was just a great, great time. We even had the police show up. It was awesome. So, you know, it's always a good party when that happens.
That's when you know it's a party.
Exactly.
Yep.
And actually, you know, it was just a really good time. And, you know, of course, we ended the evening watching Dr. Horrible. So it was great. You know, that's a sign of a really good party for me. And
then you guys were blasting that when we were walking to the car. We could hear Dr. Horrible coming from
that. And I must say that cake was absolutely brilliant. I loved that cake and it tasted really good. Mm-hmm. Just as good as it looked, you know.
The cake was amazing. Judy actually had to get that cake last minute.
Because, I know. I heard.
Because,
oh my gosh.
Her friend Monica is, for years, has been making birthday cakes for both myself and Judy. And she does cake decorations. And she and Judy were already working on a cake. And Monica came down with the flu. So she wasn't able to do it. So Judy had to scramble. And she actually found me a tie-dye cake. I was shocked when I saw it. I was just grinning ear to ear. You could actually see that up on my Facebook page. So if you have a chance to go take a peek at it. All right, folks, that wraps up this episode for this week. And I want to thank everyone else, the persons who help us every week, put the show out there. Word of mouth is always a great way. And you, the listener, we have to thank for that. If anyone, you know, wants to ever be on the show, just let me know. If you have ideas for the show, let us know. Or if you have comments on the show, of course, we can be found on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Google Talk, you know, all these other, you know, iHeartRadio, we're up there. And, you know, definitely go find us, you know, tell your friends about us. Our numbers are growing each week. I see it and I'm always amazed on how many new people we have listening to the podcast. But, you know, please rate us on any of the players that you listen to us on. If you rate us, leave feedback, or if you just want to write us, esopodcast@gmail.com, or call us at 404-963-9057. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. All right, with that being said, we will be back next week when we are doing an artist spotlight and looking at the artwork of Joe Kubert. You know, talk about a classic there, folks.
Absolutely.
And, you know,
he literally started a school.
Yeah, literally. And you can teach that.
Well, he could try.
Exactly. He can try to teach anybody to draw. So we will be back next week with Joe Kubert. Until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we will see you here on the Air Station One podcast. Thanks for listening. Peace. And we are done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you can also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.